Hello, and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into their work. I'm your host, Matt Kuhlman, and my guest this episode is Jeremy Olson. Jeremy earned his BFA from the University of Arizona in 2000, and his MFA from NYU Steinhardt in 2009. Primarily a painter, Jeremy creates surrealist images that often play with images of the face. In a recent series, he depicts magazine models with their faces obscured by items of food, and in other pieces, he arranges objects in a way that abstractly reference the face without clearly creating one. He has also sometimes worked sculpturally and creates scenes with architectural models that incorporate futuristic forms and spaces into the work. Join me as Jeremy discusses his intentions with these works and where he draws the inspiration for his imagery from. Hi, Jeremy. How you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for meeting with me here. And we're here in your studio, and you have a lot of your works around us, and I've looked through several of them before coming here, and I was trying to determine, like, what type of artist you were, I suppose, and would it be accurate to call you a surrealist? Is that...
I guess I could live with that term.
Yeah. How would you describe your brand of surrealism, I guess, then?
I think that I would say that I'm interested in talking about images, and okay. That I think that the language of surrealism is really useful in dealing with contemporary imagery as far as advertising and kind of media landscape functions.
Mm. Being a surrealist, like, how do you decide what kind of imagery to bring in? Because I saw there's a kind of large series that there's some of them here where there's portraits or faces that are obscured by different food products and stuff, and someone might see it and think it's, like, pretty random, but the consistent use of food objects says something. I'm not sure what.
Well, to me, those are interesting, taking a kind of really hyper-slick magazine imagery, these kind of ads that are very complete and, I don't know, just kind of smooth and photoshopped and removed of any kind of, like, physicality or anything really bodily, and then putting, like, gross food on it or something wet, you know, this kind of, like, interruption of the image.
So it's an oil painting done directly from an advertisement that you found, or is it your own figures that you painted?
No, they're always, like, found images.
Okay.
Yeah. I generally go through, like, kind of high-end fashion magazines and pull a lot of images from that.
Mm-hmm. And you have some other pieces that are a little bit different. There's one up here that's got, like, a setup with a lamp that's got some dentures and a photo of a army personnel, it looks like, from World War II or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of, like, a scene rather than the flat image that you were talking
right.
about there. Is it the same ideas at play in those?
The kind of shallow still lifes to me also function a similar way, and I think they're also all kind of faces, all kind of portraits in a way.
Mm-hmm.
They all kind of map onto the kind of geometry of the face. And I think that the thinking is a little bit different. It's a little more intuitive as far as how I'm constructing these scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But the ideas are kind of the same.
Yeah. I guess I can see the mapping of the face, like you said, in that one that I was just looking at, where there's the circle of the lamp, and then lower is the circle of the halo of the
right.
shadow, and then the dentures are down about where the mouth are.
Right. I'm really interested in anthropomorphism and in images, and how you always kind of look for faces, and some kind of making that a little easier for the viewer, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Did you begin as a portrait artist, or was that kind
no,
of what led to this?
That was actually, I think, when I, like, started grad school several years ago, I was making much more cinematic paintings, and I was thinking in terms of kind of the camera frame a lot
mm-hmm.
more, and moving towards a more portrait positioning and scale has been really, I don't know, I found, like, it really worked for me at the time, at least.
Mm-hmm.
It still seems to be. Hopefully.
And so, do you want to describe what some of these other paintings that we're looking at here doing?
Sure. So this painting is a painting of a bunch of branches that have been hot glued together, and there's a birdhouse hanging from them that has a houndstooth pattern on it, and there's an eyeball, like a glass doll eyeball, sitting in one of the trees looking at the birdhouse, and the hot glue is sort of dripping everywhere and looks like maybe something else. And the lighting is kind of like giallo film style lighting across, you know, red and blue, really high key and kind of over the top.
Is this an actual thing that you constructed?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I construct things and I photograph them, and then I work from the photographs, so there's kind of some layers of...
I guess, do you think it's important to do that process just to get that kind of flat image that you were talking about? It's just the image, not the object.
For me, I feel like that process lends itself to achieving a kind of a photographic quality, like a believability that exists within the photograph, that I don't think operates the same way as painting from life. And it's kind of that synthetic quality, the believable synthetic quality that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking at a photograph and then paint from it, it comes out looking a little more static or...
Right.
And not as deep of a plane of focus.
It flattens it out, and the kind of... It has that language that I think that we kind of accept a photograph. And I'm interested in that. I mean, not that we should, but...
Yeah. And so... It really wouldn't work for someone to, like, see the actual object then. You're not interested in, like, constructing this and putting it in the gallery as a setup.
Not these. And I do make objects as well. But to me, these are very much about kind of capturing a moment or an object that's very, like, provisional and can only exist, you know, briefly.
Yeah. I was wondering, is there any rhyme or reason to the foods that you use? Because I noticed that there's several fruits and... I'm aware that there's, like, historical connotations with certain fruits, like, in mythology and things. Are you just choosing something that fits the color palette?
Yeah, I mean, for me, they're really kind of formal decisions for the most part. So, obviously, like, some paintings, like this painting here, has a kind of really dumb sexual pun to it, I think, with, you know, the way the kind of forms the fruit, like, function. So that's something... Yeah, just the kind of physicality of the foods and how they work in the image. I don't know. There's a lot of play goes on.
Is that one over there of a baby strap thing?
That's a baby Bjorn.
Okay. That one seems like kind of an anomaly of
it
the
is.
Line.
Well, there's a couple... I have a couple paintings that aren't here anymore that I was making of purses, where I was looking at, like, online shopping sites that have all these kind of, you know, objects. And I was painting these, like, really expensive designer purses, but with, like, kind of, like, human skin and hair and stuff like that. So this is sort of more part of that series.
Okay. What were some of the other specific object or images that you made?
The other ones were all purses and handbags.
Just directly painted like that with kind of a
pattern
behind it?
Just kind of, like, floating in a space, yeah.
How would you want an audience to, like, see those things? Do you want them to see them as... Do you want them to feel desire for those objects, or...?
I think a combination of desire and repulsion. They have this kind of really grotesque surface to them when you get up close to them. And I think that... I mean, the reason I was drawn to them in the first place is because they're already so anthropomorphic. They already look like faces. They're these kind of... luxury goods that we kind of, like, map identity onto, and so just taking that idea one step further and trying to turn it into some, like, horrific Cronenberg creature is really funny to me, and I think hopefully makes, like, a striking image that can, you know, operate on the viewer.
And you were saying that you're a maker of objects just a minute ago, and I really wanted to talk about some of your, like, diorama works, like this one here, and how you kind of conceive of these environments that you create, and how do you create them?
I guess I would say that I'm interested in... I think that there's maybe, like, a visual disconnect between my paintings and my objects to some degree, but they make sense to me in that they're all about spaces that a viewer can, like, project themselves into.
Mm-hmm.
They're not meant to be sort of encountered in real space, like, as an object that you're equivalent to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in the kind of leap of fantasy, the kind of, like, you know, the way that you can interact with, like, an architectural model or, you know, a toy model as a child or something like that.
Yeah.
So
in a way, the viewer would have to, like, kind of connect the dots and fill in the blanks of being in that space because it's not real. So
right, and there's a kind of I'm interested in the kind of suspension of disbelief or the kind of, like, willingness to kind of enter into the, you know, a kind of fantasy space.
Mm-hmm. And in this piece over here, it's like a large rock structure, and then it's got a big geodesic dome,
mm-hmm.
I guess, type of thing on it. And then what's the scene inside the... There's, like, a little window cave.
Yeah, there's like a glass canopy on top of it that has... it's all made with two-way mirrors, so it creates a kind of diamond, like, infinite reflection.
Okay.
And then there's a hole beneath that, which leads to, like, a sort of, like, infinite staircase going down between these kind of just, you know, white, austere,
mm-hmm.
like, layers.
Okay. Where do you come up with an idea for that kind of environment?
It's something about the kind of, you know, the ultimate, like, interior architecture of space of, like, infinite, I don't know, cleanness and austerity that strikes me as kind of simultaneously very attractive and appealing and also kind of terrifying and inhuman and... there's something really fascinating to me about that.
Mm.
The kind of like Stanley Kubrick, you know, 2001 kind of, like, spaces that have this kind of, it's like the kind of pull of the void, you know what I mean? There's something so oppressive about them, but they're also beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Are science fiction films like 2001 Space Oddity something that you draw inspiration from for these things often?
Sure.
Kind of Blade Runner environments or, like,
yeah, I mean, I love all of those movies, and I think that that's always there. I mean, I watch a lot of movies, and cinema is
mm-hmm.
definitely a huge influence. But I don't think there's, like, a one-to-one relationship. I think they filter into the work in unexpected ways.
Mm-hmm. One thing I was curious about was this particular piece that we're looking at. It's like, it stands on its own, it's got a stand.
Yeah.
And the staircase that you can see through the windows, like, it's contained within it, and it's kind of small. Do people just often walk by it and think that that's the piece without even realizing that they can?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't know to look in there.
Yeah,
it actually, if it's shown sort of in the dark, then the kind of, you know, light is much more, it radiates a lot more, and I think that makes it more appealing. People are more likely to kind of really check it out.
Mm.
But in the studio, that's not really an option most of the time, except at night.
Do you want it to be kind of, they have to do a little work or investigation to discover? Do you think that's important to have this experience?
I kind of do. I think that I'd like at least the work I make to reward returning to and kind of spending a little time with. And, like, I think even the paintings can have a really quick read, and they're kind of really goofy at first, but I think they kind of change if you look at them long enough. At least
mm-hmm.
I hope they do.
Yeah.
And so the same with the sculptures. I want them to be, you know, to have multiple readings and kind of, I don't know.
Mm. There was another piece that you did that was similar to this one with the infinite staircase, where
yeah.
it was, like, from what I understood, you were looking through a peephole in a door,
mm-hmm.
and you saw this, like, large environment that probably only existed about very small.
Yeah, it's a small model, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, the lens kind of, it actually makes it look smaller to a lot of people, and
mm-hmm.
I think that people have a hard time figuring out, like, what the scale is, and that's everyone's first question. They're like, how big is that, really?
Yeah.
but yeah, that piece is called Anathema, and it's a similar idea. It's like a kind of just, like, infinite shopping mall space with this, it's like a two-way mirrors, but they're kind of on a pentagonal
mm-hmm.
arrangement, which creates a kind of really interesting infinity mirror space, unlike a kind of, like, square, like Yayoi Kusama or something.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It becomes this kind of, like Piranesi kind of, like, infinite, you know, mess of stairs and things.
Mm-hmm. And is that, like, small enough that that's something that could be installed, like, just about anywhere? Like, you could do it somewhere out in public, or you just pop it up somewhere and
I mean,
if somebody saw it there, they would...
It has to be inside a wall,
mm-hmm.
to me, or behind a wall, to me, because I don't really want the viewer to be aware of the object or the scale of the object.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, anywhere where I can have, you know, a foot,
yeah.
a foot behind a wall to stick it in, if you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just curious. Like, it'd be interesting to encounter a piece like that out in public. I
mm-hmm.
think where you've just surreptitiously put it there, and if somebody pays attention, they could discover this mind-bending thing.
Yeah.
Do you see any opportunities out in being in a city like New York to do any kind of work like that where people might unsuspectingly encounter it, or do you, would you prefer to keep it more in a gallery space?
I haven't really thought too much about doing kind of public interventions or just putting work out in the public.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it could be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that that's the direction I've been heading in.
Okay.
I don't know.
What are some other pieces that you've done along the same vein? Are there any that I didn't see or...
I don't think so. I think that those are kind of... That was kind of a standalone piece, and then this was sort of followed from it.
Are they recent? Did
those are a couple... Well, this one was from last year on the large table thing. And the people was from a couple years ago. I think it was 2010, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I could kind of just keep making those over and over, but it also kind of felt like, I don't know, like a trick you do once and then you kind of move on.
Yeah.
But I think I'll end up back in the kind of miniature space again soon.
Well, I did some other, like, dioramas that were not, like, contained like that.
Yeah.
Were they kind of along the same lines or, like, precursors to doing something like that?
They're kind of precursors. They were playing a little bit more with just the idea of architectural models or landscape models, sort of butting up against science fiction models and kind of things I played with as a kid.
Mm. What kind of scenes did you create? I don't remember.
I created this piece, which is it's sort of like a mountain with the geodesic dome on top.
Okay.
And all of the sort of planes of the dome are like these little Fresnel lenses that create a kind of miniaturizing thing, and
it's
then
like a fisheye lens.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then inside it there's a staircase that just goes like into total darkness.
Okay.
So it's just kind of this like weird viewing platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of inexplicable. It's very sci-fi.
Yeah.
And then the other piece I made that was similar to that, same scale, was kind of like an island with like a sort of little suburb, like three little houses on like a cul-de-sac, and then looming over them there's a giant kind of, it looks like a giant minimalist sculpture, but it could also be like an antenna or something with a kind of functionalist thing.
That's an interesting crossover.
Yeah.
Small ranch house. There was like, I think I remember that one now. It was like kind of small one-story ranch houses.
It's around here somewhere. I just don't know where it is.
And so, creating these like rock structures and like these environments, like how do you do that? Are they cast out of something? Or?
Oh, I mean, most of these are just like foam, and then like maybe I think Bondo.
Okay.
On top of them. And
so most of them are pretty light. And
yeah, yeah. These are very light. Yeah.
Okay.
That
they
thing,
look like
that
they could
heavy.
Be.
But
yeah. They look like they could be metal or plaster or something.
Yeah, no, they're just kind of very visually made.
Mm-hmm. You got several other like kind of forms around your studio here that kind of relate to like geodesic domes and things. So.
Yeah, I'm really attracted to the geodesic dome and any kind of structures that use that kind of idea, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of like a. You know, I don't know.
Do you just kind of see it as something that kind of speaks to that future world where the first thing I think of is like Epcot Center, you know,
big
dome and
right. Well, yeah, I'm interested in utopia and kind of like the kind of dated notions of like progress that we don't seem to believe in currently, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think they have a real formal beauty to them and a kind of, like, completeness, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They feel, like, very, in a way, very ancient, and I think they kind of speak across time
mm-hmm.
in a way that feels, like, they have an almost kind of pagan quality to them, but also a a science fiction and a futuristic and a kind of way to collapse time in an object.
Okay.
I mean, like, there's Da Vinci drawings of things like that, you know what I mean? So it's like...
I wasn't aware of that. did you discover a lot of these things by looking at older work like that, or did it just come out of your... the ether of your life of seeing them?
Yeah, I think the latter. I mean, I think that the domes, when I was in grad school, I had kind of a crisis in painting, and I spent maybe, like, 3 months just making geodesic domes out of straws or metal or any kind of... all kinds of objects. And then one of those ended up in a video. Later, they sort of ended up showing up in paintings.
Okay. And how does the relationship going back and forth between painting and creating sculptures work? How do you decide to do one or the other on a particular project?
It really is just that I'll get excited about something. So I think that's the honest answer, is just that I might get kind of bored with painting for a while and really just want to make something with my hands and get really into that for a while, and then I'll get frustrated because it's very expensive to make sculptures, and it takes a long time sometimes, and then I'll just get really excited about just, like, making some paintings. There's something really... After spending a long time on, like, that piece took forever, it's really nice to kind of just... make a small painting and just, like, there. That's it, you know?
So you just kind of jump back and forth to...
Yeah, I mean...
one you're interested.
I think I jump back and forth more in, like, 6 month increments or even, like, year increments, you know?
Where are you at now?
Right now I'm making paintings. Like, that's all I've been doing for the last year. And I worked on a video a little bit while I was at a residency recently. But I don't know if that's ever going to be completed.
Yeah. Where was the residency at?
At Oxbow in Michigan.
Okay. What was the film...
A video that I was working on where I was shooting with a bunch of friends there, and, like, I made masks for people and using a similar kind of geodesic, like, lens structure, and also shot a lot of footage through a lens like that that I made. And it kind of has a weird, like, cult in the woods kind of thing to it.
Yeah. It's pretty, like, out there. Like, it's not near... Detroit or anything, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it's like in nature. It's by the lake. It's off a lagoon. So, yeah. It's very, like, summer camp for artists, you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
And so, are the new paintings that you're working on now, are they along the same series that we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm still just kind of setting up still lifes and finding objects that are interesting to me texturally or... and the connotations, and kind of just constructing these kind of scenes or characters, you know, things that can operate both as characters and as scenarios. So I think that's kind of the direction I'm still moving in right now.
Okay. Well, I think I'm about out of questions for you. You have anything else you wanted to touch back on?
Not really.
No. Well, very good. Thanks for meeting with me today.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you around.
All right. Great.
Concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest Jeremy Olson. You can find his work online at jeremyolson.com. You can also learn more about me at my website, mattkuhlman.com. If you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation through PayPal to studiosessionspodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit bigredandshiny.com for future episodes, along with other arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions.